Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
First I was a Catholic girl, loved the mass, I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed, I really felt that I was blessed. Plus I loved my uniform, so did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age, and all those things I thought were true, someday I'd break the big taboo. Oh, letting go, oh God, letting go, oh God.
Okay, this is Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM, live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is October 10th, 2018, at 7 o'clock p.m. So if you're not listening to us at that date and time, then you're probably listening to a rebroadcast or a podcast. With me today, we have Thomas Paine. Yes, that's right.
Hello, Knoxville, or whoever's listening.
Yeah. And that's not a pseudonym, is it?
No, it's not.
Yeah. Well, welcome to the show. I'm going to
try to turn Thank you.
Just a little bit. That way I can drop this down a bit.
I'm not a ghost or a soul.
Nope. And Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we'll be talking about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition, and today, souls. And if you get the feeling that you're the only non-believer in Knoxville, well, you're just not. There are several atheist, free-thinking, and rationalist groups that exist here in Knoxville, and I'll be telling you how you can connect with them after the mid-show break. And did you know that there was an atheist call-in television show broadcasting here in Knoxville? Did you know that, Tom?
Yes, I'm on it.
You were on it last
week? I'm on it last week.
That's right. What did y'all talk about last week?
We talked a little bit about this thing called evolution. Some people may know.
Evolution? What's that?
Evolution. Oh, it's just the reason why we're here.
No. Us? I'm here because of my mom and dad. No, I'm sure it was a good show. Matter of fact, right now that show is going on, or the TV show that we were talking about, the Atheist Call-In TV show, is broadcasting every Wednesday from 6:30 to 7:30 on Comcast Channel 12. And if you turn on your TV right now, you should be able to see at least the last half. But TiVo it, so you won't have to leave the radio show. You can listen to our show.
Or you can go to archive.org and watch it there.
Archive.org?
Yeah.
Really? Okay, cool. I know that you could go to YouTube and watch a lot of the archives there. Knoxville Free Thought Forum. If you search for that on YouTube, you should come up with about 8 years of archives. But I didn't know about the archive.org. Mm-hmm. And in spite of what Steve Martin would have you think, there are lots of atheist songs out there, and you can be hearing some of them on this program. And generally on the station as they are in rotation. So keep listening to WOZO Radio 103.9, and you'll be able to hear some free thought songs a little sooner or later. And today's topic is souls. One of the things about Christianity and most religions is they always want to talk about their God and how they can prove God is real, and they can prove that that sin is real and all the other claims, but all of it goes out the window if souls aren't real. And correct me if I'm wrong, but over 2,000 years, or 2,500 years, 3,000 years, even going back to the pharaohs who believed in souls as well, the Egyptians, ancient Egyptians, they felt that they were going to go to an afterlife when they died as well. But nobody, even in 5,000 years, if that's the case, has anybody ever demonstrated that a soul is real?
No. There's been a plethora of experiments, so many experiments, and we're going to touch on a few of these things, but if there was a soul, we would have found out by now, for
sure.
You
would think, especially.
You would think. Probability is very high.
In this last century, with all the electronic and scientific equipments that we have, and the way that we can measure even gravity waves, we still have not discovered a soul. And if you know how a way to prove a soul exists, well, you can let us know. We'll let the Nobel Prize Committee know, and you'll get rich. You'll have a Nobel Prize when they, I think they usually give $1 million with the prize. So
I could use $1 million.
Let us know. Call us. Matter of fact, the phone lines are open. This is a call-in talk radio show, so call 865-333-5937. That's 333-5937 in Knoxville, Tennessee, and we'll discuss it.
Yeah, you mentioned this briefly, I mean, just a second ago, and you made a really good point, is that if scientists proved that there was a God or a soul or anything, people think that, oh, scientists are against Christianity or religion, but not really. If they could prove this, it would be one of the largest achievements of their lifetime. Mm-hmm. It would be...
Our human lifetime.
Oh, yes.
Humanity. To prove that an actual soul exists or a God exists and be able to prove that it's the God of a particular religion. Because remember, we have to bridge that link. You know, even if you could prove that a God exists, it could be a deist God. It could be one of the ancient Roman gods or the Greek gods or even one of the many Hindu gods. You know, just proving a God exists wouldn't get you home free to your religion or any of the claims of your religion. You have to prove, one, that he exists, two, that he's your God. And, of course, nobody's done either of those in the history of mankind.
No,
they just claim it. And especially if you don't believe it, and when the church had power, like back during the Inquisition, nobody's ready for the Inquisition. You know, if you didn't believe and said you didn't believe, they could darn well bring you in and make you say you believed, whether or not you actually did. So that was the way, instead of bringing them in and showing them the evidence that they had for the existence of gods and their religious claims, which is what, you know, scientists would do.
Yes.
If they make claims, they'll bring you and show you the evidence. But what did Christianity do? Particularly, what was it, Catholicism, the Church of the first main Church of Christ.
Kind of similar things they're doing nowadays. Yeah. Horrible stuff.
Yeah. would grab you and basically browbeat you into a submission. Oh.
They used to, I don't know if this is too graphic, but they used to put a steel tub full of like rats, and then they would heat up the tub, and the only way out would be through your stomach. Oh, it's this horrible torture they would come up with just because they wanted you to give in to the idea that there was a God or whatever they wanted you to say. You were a witch or your friends were witches or anything like that.
And what's even worse is once they got you to confess your belief in God, then they would have you name other people.
Right.
You know, who might be on the outliers or non-believers or believing in some other God. It just went on and on forever. It lasted for like 300 years. It wasn't just the Spanish Inquisition. That was just one of the worst. But it went on throughout Europe for hundreds of years and only ended in the 1800s.
Oh.
It was going too
far away.
No, it wasn't. But anyway, getting back to souls. There was one guy, Dr. McDougall, back in 1901, who said that he was going to do some experiments, and he did, to prove that when a person died, the soul left the body. And he got several nearly dead people. You can imagine the ethical problem you'd have in a situation like that today. You know, some doctor saying, if you're going to die in the next couple of days, you know, come see me. We'll set up an experiment. When you die, we'll weigh you. Actually,
or like, hey, you know, I really need a roommate, and you look really sick. So if you want to be my roommate, rent's really cheap.
Yeah. And when you do these type of experiments, you need a large a large body of subjects. In other words,
sample
you
size.
Need several hundred people to be able to come up with some reliable numbers. He had four.
Yeah,
four. And he had a system of weights and balances that used beams of wood. So you can imagine that he...
It wasn't digital?
No,
not
digital.
I wouldn't trust that.
Anyway, so he really didn't get much of a, sample size for this type of thing. He started off with six people, but he discarded two of them And of those two cases, he said, our scales are not finely adjusted and therefore need a good deal of interference by people who are opposed to our work. I can imagine. My sixth and last case was not a fair test, he said. The patient died almost within 5 minutes after being placed on the bed and died while I was adjusting the beam. So, you know, he's left with four people. And of those four people, one was said to have lost 3/4 of an ounce. Another lost 1/2 ounce, which grew to 1.5 ounces over time. Whoever was recording that put a little number in front of it. The third was said to have lost 3/8 of an ounce, and the fourth also 3/8 of an ounce, which is not too much mass to be lost. Even error would, you know.
I mean, there's a lot of error in between each one.
Error, yeah.
Standard deviation is bigger than the average.
Yeah, that's hardly conclusive. Not only did the doctor admit up front that our scales were not finely adjusted, but it's quite possible that this tiny bit of weight loss from a full-sized man, especially over a bit of time, could be accounted for by the evaporation fluids from the epidermis. But that's not really where I want to go. I mean, basically,
but that's a good experiment. That would be a really good experiment to do if there was a soul and if it had mass.
Right. That's where I was going to go. We don't have a soul. We've never had a soul to experiment on. We've never had a soul to weigh. We've never had a soul to look through to see how much light reflects through it. We have absolutely no idea of the attributes of a soul.
No, we don't.
I mean, it could weigh 3 pounds. It could weigh nothing. It could have negative weight. We don't know anything about it. But, you know, he was living in a Christian society, and he was a Christian doctor, and he wanted to be able to prove that souls exist. So he assumed that souls have mass and that they have weight. And he was going to prove it by this experiment.
And you think he failed?
I'd say he's fairly spectacularly failed. But anyway,
he found out that the souls were really just dead weight. Dun dun dun.
Oh God.
Oh man, that's golden.
Yeah, but the thing about it is, souls. I mean, a Christian or a Muslim or most of the Abrahamic religions will tell you that your soul is going to. I mean, when you die, your soul goes to heaven. I mean, just in that one sentence, you got two major claims. One, that you have a soul, and two, that it has a place to go once you die.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, in the case of Christianity, they say that you got two places to go, and they know all about those places and can tell you about those places.
Yeah. And actually, if you think about it, if you want to read the Bible and take it literally, you have three places to go. It just changed from Old Testament to New Testament. You had Sheol, which was like purgatory, and then you had later heaven and hell.
Yeah.
Three things that we never proved that could exist.
Yeah, so nobody's ever been there and come back and told us, took pictures, you know, or took a tour through. We got a phone call coming in, so we're going to try to answer that. Hold on a second. Hello, you're on the air, Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. May we have a name or a nickname?
Hello, Scott.
Hey, Scott. How are you?
How's it going?
Fine. You have a comment or question for us?
Yeah, I was just going to kind of participate in the conversation if I could regarding the topic of the soul.
Uh-huh.
And just another way to kind of approach it, I'll kind of describe something I was thinking about. This is kind of a redefinition of the soul. I think a lot of the conversation, you know, you guys are having, and probably the more traditional idea of a soul is kind of a dualistic sort of idea.
Yeah, like separation from the body and the mind.
Yeah.
The body, yeah, soul, like the difference between mind and matter, you know, the two are separate.
Yeah. I don't believe they are. I don't believe they are separate. I mean, I think the mind is based in the brain, which is a part of your body. We've never had any example anywhere in our knowledge or
of any kind of intelligence that was not based in matter, based in hardware, basically. Maybe a computer, a human body, a brain, whatever. But we've never had any kind of existence or evidence of a free-floating intelligence, a mind, if you will.
Exactly. And you know, the idea of the mind is, you know, any time that, you know, people point to consciousness, it's always correlations, you know. There's a really tight correlation with human consciousness and the human brain, right?
Uh-huh.
So if I were to think of an orange sun, you know, it's not like you can open my brain up and see an actual picture of an orange sun. It doesn't work that way.
You're talking about ideas.
But what you can do is you can get a report from me.
Right. Okay.
And then you can look through like a MRI scanner, for example, and see blood flow or see where it's activated within my mind or within my brain. A part of the brain would light up, so to speak. And this would kind of correlate with my report.
Right, because you have this brain, this brain light up or activity always preceding, like what you said, some type of function or some type of phenomenon.
Exactly. It correlates really tightly to the report. And beyond that, even before before I actually experience the picture in my mind or whether it's a movement that I make, any kind of thought, there's actually a buildup of processes happen even before I'm aware of an action I'll take or a decision I'll make or anything like that. It happens. It starts to happen. It ramps up and sort of emerges into an experience.
Right. Yeah, and
so
then
looking at
it culminates.
An MRI
in
machine kind of gives you a third person perspective, but what's missing is the subjective experience. And that's what I'm kind of arguing is the soul. It's the experiential part. It's not necessarily a physical part. It's related to physicality. If I were to say, you know, I have a toothache, you know, that's kind of a quality of an experience I'm talking about. Now, if a doctor said, hey, I looked in your brain, I don't see anything, I don't see any pain, I'd be kind of irritated, you know.
Yeah.
But he knows that.
But why couldn't this idea that you're talking about, this concept...
Fire, you can see that kind of correlation to my report. What's missing is that internal feeling that I can only give you in words, that I could never prove or never demonstrate.
Right.
I can only demonstrate the correlation.
You're very correct, but we can't like demonstrate that it's there. But we can tweak it. If I ablated some type of neural network in your brain, then all of a sudden, all the things you're subjectively feeling are going to change. Your personality changes, the way your mood changes, the way you picture thing in reality changes. Yeah. Or I can give you like LSD, and then all of a sudden your world changes. The things you perceive change, and so I do think that people like you said. People want to have this idea of a soul like an internal ghost, but really, it's really hard to comprehend this background program, this subjective feeling that we can't actually touch.
Exactly. And so, when we're trying to define, you know, physically what a soul is, I would say that it's actually everything and kind of nothing at the same time. It's nothing we can really point to and grab and say, hey, it weighs a certain amount or it can be viewed, we can see it, it's this ghost or this thing we can actually detect. But we know that the experience, the experiential quality of living exists. We know that. I mean, it's our most primary thing that we know. If there's anything that I know more than anything else, is that I'm conscious.
Yeah, right. Well, you're equating consciousness. You're equating consciousness with a soul. And when we say, well, that's not necessarily a valid equation. And even if we agreed with you and said, okay, a mind is evidence for a soul, there are an awful lot more claims that Christianity makes about a soul than just that it contains the mind. I mean, they say, one, that it will live past your body dying. There's, right. You know, there's no evidence at all that your mind will continue to function after your body dies.
Correct.
Also, they say that it's going to live forever
Correct.
After you die, and that it has places to go. And, you know, and I mean, there's no basis for any of those claims, but
exactly.
people just, when they make them, people just nod at each other.
Right, and I think you both have a good definition, because Larry or... what do you call yourself? What's your name?
God or five. You can call me Larry. That's
Larry has a definition where, he, obviously, the Christianity version of the soul, or the religious version of the soul, is totally debunked. And then your version of the soul makes sense, but no matter how you look at it, no matter how you tweak it, it is tethered by biology. And that's how we know it's nothing beyond biology. Even though mm-hmm. it's hard to grasp, because consciousness in itself is a weird thing to think about.
Yeah. And I would say, and just to kind of wanted to expand on that a little bit, I'm kind of going a little bit beyond just the biology, and this is kind of where it gets a little bit weird, but hopefully it'll be a little bit understandable. It's just a view, but I would say that experience not only is generated in the brain, but it's actually generated from your perception and the information that comes through your perceptual organs. So we're talking about everything that's causally linked would make up your experience. In other words, your experience is sort of splattered on everything that you experience itself in the quote-unquote outside world. I mean, it all takes place in your mind. I mean, that's your only conduit.
Well, no, I think that we all can agree that certain outside things happen. I mean, you have a mind, I have a mind, he does. But we can all agree that we're here talking to each other, that we have means for communication, that we're doing a radio show. So it's not all in our minds, and the listeners are experiencing it as well. But they're experiencing it from a different perspective.
It's kind of like the thing, like your version of blue is different than my version of blue, different than Larry's version of blue. We all perceive the same stimuli, but it's different in a way because we... But again, we can link this to biology because we have different neural networks. We have different amounts of different cones and rods in our eyes. So we know we can even quantify why.
A lot of our epistemology is colored by our experience and our genetic background. There's
right.
no genetic memory. There's
all this biological reasoning behind it.
And so I think what I'm trying to say is that, you know, we're causally, our consciousness, everything that we experience is causally linked somewhere. I mean, I would say even to the beginning, you could causally link it all the way to the Big Bang if you wanted to.
I would call that reality.
I'm not a big free will proponent. I don't believe in free will. I believe the universe is kind of a block universe. That, and it's backed up by, you know, relativity theory. I mean, your GPS words can kind of show you that we pretty much, that relativity and the principles work, you know, and it gives us what our technology and things, and, you know, we can go into that, but basically how that relates to us, we are within this universe, you know, we are part of the universe, so we're causally linked to everything that exists.
Yeah,
by the
first cause.
Is that like string theory? I mean, it's not my forte, I'm no physicist, but... Yeah, again, like butterfly effect, string theory, you know, every stimuli, we all perceive these stimuli differently. We all are stimuli to something else, and then it's like a infinite regress of a kind. Like, there's all these interactions going on. And I agree with you that there is no free will. I'm a determinist myself, in a way. I think the thing that I would disagree with is that I know there's no soul, but... To define consciousness, it is definitely hard, and I agree with you that way. And I really haven't found my true definition of consciousness either.
Well,
and I could grab some components of yours, and definitely worth thinking about.
It's one of the squishiest subjects out there. It's hard to get a hold on consciousness.
Yeah,
that's the hard problem.
I mean, philosophy has been wrestling with that forever.
You know, we'd have to say, like, you know, I kind of feel like one of the interesting things about the consciousness topic these days is, you know, you've got IIT, the information integration theory. All of this is kind of
AI,
a panpsychic sort of
uh-huh.
View. And it does create a, you know, it has its own problems, but so does a strict materialist viewpoint has a lot of problems.
How, how do you think AI is going to change that? Because I feel like that's going to answer a lot of things about consciousness.
If AI was to actually happen and we could verify that machines could actually experience, then we would definitely know that there's a principle of consciousness.
Yeah, but still, it would be based in a hardware. It would not
be able to tangibly point to it and say, look,
you can't
these
hear me
machines have souls talking. Now. These machines are souls. I would say have souls, but in my view, it would be they are souls. They are experiential beings.
Well, I think you're just laying an awful lot of labels on that. I mean, the soul is a label that people have been using forever
right.
to talk about something that transcends death. Now you're saying that a machine can have a soul? Is it going to continue to live after you turn it off?
A machine would be an experience.
But the thing, if like I said before, like mentioned many times, is that if the machine does have a soul, it's similar to a biological network. Is it has a program, it has a algorithm that it uses, so we can find it by stimuli and receptors, or not receptors, but signal to transceiver, you know, receiver, all these things.
And all that stuff works totally different than a brain. I mean, I admit, you know, a computer, you know, our brain is not a computer. I mean, that's a really rough analogy. I mean, it's useful to speak of it that way. But, you know, brains have plasticity. You know, if you were to, you know, disable one part of your brain, another part of your brain would actually pick up the load and start doing the work.
You mean kind of like an internet?
So it's not like... It doesn't work in a computer. It would be like, my hard drive is corrupt, and so now my network card is going to pick up the load of the hard drive.
If the brain's not like a computer, then what do you think about like those programs that it's like machine learning programs that evolve, they grow, they get better over time, and that's similar to a brain, and we're just at the precipice.
No, I disagree. I think the brain is just like a computer.
Exactly.
It's a different type of computer. Now, let me ask you this. If a computer had a soul and you turn it off and the soul just kept on living, does that mean when you turn it back on, the soul will come back to the computer? Or does it start a new soul? And if you turn it off six times, does it generate
right now,
six computers?
I'm not really sure if computers are conscious the way, you know, if they have any kind of experiential quality to them. I wouldn't know. I mean, really, to be fair, I can't know if the person I'm speaking to is conscious themselves. It could be a philosophical zombie, as, you know, some people talk about. I don't know that because it's a first-person thing. I can only assume that another person is conscious. So how much harder is it to assume a machine would be conscious? I mean, hopefully we'll get to the point where we can actually see some sort of correlation to it and make some sort of, diagnosis.
Yeah.
Well, on that, but yeah. Right now I think it's a little early for that.
Well, one of the things that you mentioned earlier was that you were didn't believe in free will.
Right.
Well, the thing about computers are they're written by programmers.
Right.
And they have programs,
right.
And all of the if and un statements are already in there. They really don't have much of a free will. Even if they got intelligence, if they were so smart they got up to a point where they could be individually intelligent, they wouldn't have free will either. So
no,
basically, they're a computer and
anything
we're a computer.
Everything in the universe, as far as I understand it, is causally linked to something else. Causation kind of kills free will for me.
Yeah.
That's my opinion. I could be wrong about that, but it just seems that causation in itself, just as a concept, just by definition, you couldn't have free will in the way that we're kind of talking about it. But, you know, I do kind of feel like if time itself, and it goes back to you were asking me about will souls live on, or after you die do you continue to live? Well, death may be just another concept. I mean,
maybe, but the time to believe that is when you have evidence for it. And we're at the bottom of the hour, and I've got to do a station identification. So if you'll hang with us, we'll come back to you in just a little bit. But we're going to take a break, and we'll probably be back in about 3 or 4 minutes. So.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, hold on. Welcome back. This is a Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on digital on WOZO Radio 103.9 LP right here in Knoxville. That's 103.9 LP FM live right here in Knoxville. Now, we need to take a minute to talk to you about the free thought groups that you can join that are right here in Knoxville. First, there's the Atheist Society of Knoxville. founded in 2002. We're in our 16th year. ASK has like 878 members now, I think, the last poll I looked at yesterday. And you can find us online at KnoxvilleAtheist.org. Or you can go directly to meetup.com and search for Knoxville Atheists. It's just that simple. Also, you can join ASK in person at our weekly meetup that happens every Tuesday at Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria. It happened yesterday in the Old City, where we get together for food, drink, and conversation. Everyone is welcome. That is, as long as you don't come to preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch.
Yeah, and Christians, please come, because I would love to argue with someone. Just come on.
Discuss.
We don't really want to argue. I mean, like, civil discussion.
Yeah.
That's what I mean.
By the way, if you don't live in Knoxville and you can still find a meetup in your area, go to meetup.com and look for atheists. And if you don't find one, start one. Another large free-thinking group in Knoxville is the Rationalists of East Tennessee. They've been around for more than 20 years. RET is bi-weekly presentations and discussions at the Pellissippi State Campus near Hardin Valley Road. They meet the first and third Sunday in the Goins Administration Building in the cafeteria annex, but if that's too much to remember, just go to rationalist.org and click on upcoming events.
One of the next upcoming speakers is Andrew Seidel. He's a famous atheist for the Freedom From Religion Foundation. He's coming out with a book about the founding of America and how it's secular. Come check it out.
Okay, I'm gonna play a little break return music. It's got a message or so in it, and we'll be back in about 30 seconds.
You're listening to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO 103.9 LPFM in Knoxville, Tennessee. Feel free to join in on the conversation at 865-333-5937. That's 865-333-5937. And now, back to the show. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Simply the best.
Okay, we're back. This is Digital Free Thought Radio Hour in Knoxville, Tennessee on 103.9 LPFM. It's October 10th, 2018. It's about 7:30. And with us today we have Thomas Paine. No, I'm not kidding.
Hello.
My co-host for the night. And on the phone we have a caller, Scott. Are you still with us?
Scott from California.
I'm still here.
Okay, where are you from?
Orange County, California.
Yes.
Okay, very good. And we were talking about machine...
My soul remembered that.
Yeah, machine souls and artificial intelligence and actual souls, if we could ever determine that they were real. Anyway, where did you leave off, Scott?
I was just going to say one last point I wanted to put in there regarding the eternalness of a soul, because that's part of the definition. And if I were to point to something scientific that we can really prove and that's been proven and demonstrated, it would be the Einstein's theory of relativity, and especially with how it relates to time, because time is really a coordinate of space, so it exists somewhere, right? So
it's part of the it's part of the space makeup.
We don't really ever really die. There may be a point in the universe where we cease to exist, but there'll always be a point where we're
when you say we, you're assuming that there's a piece of energy floating around out there that has my mind in it. That's not the energy that Einstein was talking about. He's just talking about energy, period. Now, the way you're describing this, you would say that if you blow out a candle and the energy dissipates into the room, that the candle is always in that room or always in the universe. No, it's just a different form of energy, and it doesn't have anything to do with intellect or mindness.
I think energy is a good thing to concentrate on, is that one thing, if the soul is tangible and it's altered by how we manipulate the neurons in our brain, one, and then it relies on some type of physical principle that relies on the brain, and then we have to go through the conservation of energy, and therefore it needs energy to survive, and nothing can truly be eternal, it's only transformed. And therefore, when we die, something has to transform, and most likely it's not going to be in the same state as we are in today.
Okay,
so I think the misunderstanding here is in the definition of time. Because time, we look at it as a flowing forward stream, So as long as we're alive, we're going to see, you know, events take place, and that's really what causes this idea of time, right?
Mm-hmm.
But according to you know, science, time isn't necessarily what we think it is. You know, 1955 still exists somewhere in the universe. It's according
like the multiverse?
So people who were alive in 1959, you know, whether it be stars, whether it be pieces of grass or people or animals, whatever, anything that was existing at any point in the universe, anywhere, at that time coordinate is going to always...
I doubt it. Personally, I just doubt it. I'm one of those who think that the universe is marching forward all of the time pretty much in lockstep with each other. I mean, there may be pockets of it that are moving a little slower because of their motion, and other pockets that may be moving relative to us faster. But, I mean, the universe as a whole is getting older, and I don't think there's any old universe just laying around waiting for somebody to visit.
Well, the universe is going towards something, heat death, you know,
yeah.
It's going to stop. It's going to hit equilibrium. Nothing's going to exist any longer. And, you know, all that stuff is really, really complicated, like the soul, the physics of the universe, how we began, how we end. But the one thing that you mentioned, you keep on mentioning that we exist, like, in this certain type of time bubble. The thing is that, yes, you're correct, everything exists still if you think about everything shares energy at one point in time. But the energy is not what we perceive it now. That means if having a soul is perceiving stimuli from the environment, then everything has a soul. Leaves, fungus, yeah. Bacteria.
Exactly. Everything is that exactly.
And then
is that the soul is essentially everything that's causally connected, which is really everything.
So you're saying the soul is energy.
Are you there?
It's more than energy. It's everything that, yeah.
If it was more than energy, then we would probably measure some type of different type of energy, and we haven't done that.
Yeah. I think what I'm getting at is thinking of the soul, number one, as a separate entity is probably false, and also thinking of a soul that's a separate entity that will live on forever, that will have some sort of life after the body dies is false. That it has free will is probably not true. I'm just saying that we kind of just shift our perspective a little bit, we can probably see how experience is a real thing as an experience, as a quality of being. And
yeah.
If that's the case, that quality of being can exist forever in the sense that time is never really a flowing river as we intuitively think of it as.
But quality is dynamic. It changes. You know, you have good days, bad days.
Yeah, of course. From our perspective, everything changes. That's all that exists is change.
So let's say I tweak a couple of your neurons and you are comatose, but your body's alive. Do you think you'll have this perspective? Do you think you're able to be aware of things?
It would definitely change because here's the other issue. You know, this is where I get back into the panpsychist view. We have a problem when we say, well, the brain is only where consciousness exists. It's the only place we know intelligence really exists is in the brain of an animal. We don't really see a threshold, like where do we cross the line? And so a lot of people who study the mind, a lot of neuroscientists and physicists together are working on ideas that say that, you know, consciousness goes all the way down. Now, is the consciousness of a human being different than the consciousness of a bat or of a lower form of animal or even lower, like a worm? How far does it go down? And maybe the only thing that changes is the quality based on the complexity and how that biological organism works.
Right.
You might say, well, that's like saying rocks are conscious. How could a rock be conscious? Well, a rock, as defined as a rock, I wouldn't think that would be conscious.
Well, they wouldn't have a nervous system.
A rock is made of molecules.
But there's very big difference between consciousness and what we define as consciousness and a soul.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, I'm sorry, repeat.
When we're talking about consciousness, there's stuff we can define about consciousness, there's studies about consciousness, but we know that there's not this material soul. There's been millions of experiments that says that there's not one present. But there have also been experiments that show that there's a thing of what we can measure as consciousness. It's just hard to get at right now.
Yeah, but it's always been based on a physical platform. That's why when we have thoughts and we think about certain concepts and we're in an MRI, parts of our physical brain light up. And as far as what you were talking about earlier, that, you know, things happen before we even know that we have a concept of it, I think that the concept itself is a culmination of the activity that goes on in the brain working up the concept.
I agree.
You would expect that. You know, it's an emergent phenomenon. But all of it is based on neuronic activity, and all of that is based on having a system of neurons and nerves in your body, nervous system.
Along those lines.
Rocks don't have nervous systems.
If you were to say if one person or one thing is conscious, right?
Mm-hmm.
How would it, and of course you're not in their mind, so to speak. How do you know that another person is conscious or another thing is conscious?
Well, it's getting harder, especially if you go through computers.
I know I can change their consciousness by hitting them in the head with a brick.
Or doing a lobotomy.
I agree with that, of course, but I mean, just a very simple way, like if you saw someone across from you, how do you know that person you're looking at?
Here's the thing. I think I know where you're going. So here's the analogy that I've heard, is that when Gregory Mendel did his experiments, he didn't know about genes, but he knew how heredity worked. We didn't know that it was connected to genes, but we knew that the system existed.
It didn't have a mechanism.
Yeah, it's similar with consciousness. We really can't put our finger on it right now, but we know it's neuronal and it's biological and it's temporary.
And it's tied to matter, right?
Yeah.
So let me ask you in this way, maybe this will be a little more better way to ask. Would intelligent behavior be a good estimate of a conscious thing?
Well,
if something acted intelligently,
I mean,
like if it had memory, if it remembered and then behaved based on memories, if it did certain things, would that give you reasonable certainty that it may be conscious?
No.
No.
The reason I say that 100 years ago, I would have answered yes. But since the development of computers and robots, you know, we are fast approaching let's say during this century, we will have robots that will be able to interact with us as a human or as a conscious being. But would you consider them conscious? I mean, I wouldn't. But maybe in 1,000 years or 5,000 years, they would develop an emergent consciousness.
Yeah, it's really weird because now we have programs, one, that can evolve and get and learn as they go. And we also have programs, I think they're called neural networks, where you have all these other programs connected together and they run better as a group. And so I think in like 10 to 20 years, we'll probably be able to answer this question a lot better. But you're right, it is... It's fuzzy the way you that's a good question, and it's fun to ponder, and I think that's what's cool about science instead of religion is that we can ponder about these things.
I'm suggesting I know one way or the other. It's kind of just a sort of a viewpoint that I could, you know, ponder really deeply and go with it. The reason I ask the question, if I saw another biological organism, whether it be a human or anything else, and it was actually interacting with its environment internally and externally, I could, you know, like if my dog cries when he hurts his hand or a paw or something like that, I mean, I don't just assume he's a zombie and then I can just hurt the animal. Obviously, I feel like the animal is responding to pain. He's actually...
Every organism responds to environmental stimuli. Otherwise, they wouldn't have survived.
Well, look at an amoeba.
He very well could be a zombie. I would have no idea.
Well,
I'm not in his mind, and that would really go for.
Well, we've done tests on dogs and stuff.
But if I take that, if I were to go with that logic, then I would have to say that simple slime mold is conscious.
Yeah, I wouldn't. Because, I mean, I would have drawn the line well before amoebas. They don't have a nervous system. There's no neurons. They just...
No neurons, no brain.
Right,
yet.
Yeah.
They interact with their environment.
They find food, they reproduce.
They do irrational things.
Uh-huh.
Well, I don't know about that. So it just makes me
wonder. They watch sitcoms.
Do they ponder about the soul themselves? Yeah. That's kind of a good segue or point, is that when you were talking about biological things, we only know one form of life, right? And so,
well, one form of conscious intelligence.
Yeah,
even dogs can be considered intelligent. We can have orangutans.
We also could have these life forms from outer space that are totally different, that have a totally different way of thinking, and their idea of consciousness may be totally different than ours. And so, it's really hard to pin down. I think is that why it's called the heart problem, because it's difficult as hell.
Yeah, part of it, because there's a mind-body problem. It's more like a brain-mind problem. You don't know at what point does consciousness sort of kick in or why. I mean, all of this stuff could go on in the dark perfectly, like a machine. I mean, there's no reason to think that there has to be experience to go along with any of the processes we're talking about.
Yeah.
And yet it does. It's the first thing we know about life, is that we're experiencing something.
Yeah. I think... out of all, you know, it is something weird and we can't really pinpoint it, but since we can tie it to biological processes, we know that it's linked here and tethered here and tethered within the amount of ATP and synapses firing and all these other things, that is something that we will be able to study in the future and understand better, but it's not what any of these other religions say is a soul.
Disembodied, right.
Right. So I think we agree on like 99.9% of the things.
Yep.
One thing I'd like to say is...
interesting conversation, guys. I do appreciate being on the phone with you guys.
Sure. We're here every week on Wednesday between 7 and 8 Eastern time. So call in.
Very good.
Live long and prosper, Scott.
Take care.
All right, man. Thank you so much.
Sure. Take care.
Bye-bye.
One thing I'd like to say about all of this is we talked about an awful lot of interesting things about energy having minds potentially and living forever out in the universe. The time to actually, it's fun to entertain these things, and actually you can make scientific progress by entertaining them at length and proposing experiments to test them and recording your data and publishing them. But the thing to remember is that the time to believe something is when the evidence presents itself. Don't believe it before then, as truth anyway.
Right, and so even though we couldn't answer the question, I don't know, it's a hard question to answer, we do appreciate people calling in like Scott to discuss these type of things.
Hey, Ty.
Hey, what's up?
Oh, we're pretty good. I got you on speaker. Hold on. See if you can hear.
Is this Wombat?
Yeah.
Hello, Wombat.
Okay.
Shrimp on the ball, Dave.
Okay, I'm going to put you on into the system. Hold on. Okay, can you hear
me? All these notes. I didn't get through any of them.
I want to hear you on my microphone. I mean, on my headset.
Cool. Just keep.
Yeah.
Just keep going. I've been listening into the whole show.
Okay, real good. What did you think about our conjectures that was proposed by Scott there in the last half hour?
I really liked how you guys handled the caller that was on just a while ago. I was telling people to tune in, and it's always cool to just hear, how the show is really open to having people call in, and the respectfulness that you showed to the people who was most particularly the caller.
Sure.
And that it's important to show that, hey, you can have disagreements, but it doesn't have to be about arguments, and I'm all about that. So great job, guys.
Oh, well, good. We enjoyed it, too. You never know what you can learn from a conversation. It does go both ways.
Yeah. And also, it made me want to, all this talk about consciousness, I really want to take a bunch of wild mushrooms now. I think that's the perfect thing to segue into. Yeah,
but we do not propose that you do.
No, I don't have any. They're illegal.
Yeah. Now, Tom, I see you brought a lot of notes here. Is there something you'd like to jump into real quick before we've only got 10 minutes left in the show.
We talked about how if you change the neurons, like in a genetic disease or an injury, it causes a change in personality. So we know that it's biological. So we talked about that with Scott. We also talked about correlation does not mean causation. So we know that every time, but we also know that every time you do something, it's first preceded by a stimulus in the brain. You have this lighting up. We can measure this with MRI and stuff. So that always happens. And we also use neuroscience. We have predictive power. And that also gives support that there is no soul, that it's biological, because we can predict what happens by doing and altering certain neurons in our brain.
Uh-huh.
And with drugs as well.
Right. And Wombat, you're a biochemist. Have you got any experience in this area with maybe rudimentary consciousness, or can you throw a light on the,
on the conversation? I have a question. I have a question for Wombat.
Way above my pay grade. Way above my pay grade. I work with bacteria, but I would say it seems like I don't know how. I would love to hear what you guys think about it. It seems like, in the same way how wetness is an emergent property of like water droplets coming together. Because like one molecule of water isn't something that we would call wet. There's not enough of a continuum there.
Right.
When you have enough of these synapses in the brain working together, you start to have consciousness as an emergent property in the same way that you would have wetness, like water droplets.
Mm-hmm.
And at least as far as my mindset, the way that I would demonstrate that claim is we've seen in medical history when we have damage to the brain, we directly have damage to consciousness. So I can orange in my elbow, but I'm still just as conscious. But if you injure my brain, if you hurt the way that I'm able to think, way how electricity is able to transfer across brain cells, that affects my consciousness in a near direct level. And it's still a murky thing, you know, consciousness is one of those weird things, but I think there is a direct physical source for it. And it's kind of cool that we are closer more than ever on determining that. What do you think about that?
But the consciousness, like, is a scientific question. The soul is not. It's very different. And I think that's where I disagree with most of, especially religion, but with a lot of people when we're talking about the soul, they jump to consciousness. I'm like, oh, to me, that's a very different question.
They're not co-equal. One we know exists, one has never been proven to exist.
Yeah, I think the soul's a really, really complex thing, because the question would be, like, what is the nature of it? Is it something that's based on the physical body? Is it something that's not? Is it something that can be measured? It seems like we have a lot of conflicting opinions by very passionate people. And if we can get some sort of consensus from them, then we'd be able to have, like, maybe some path forward towards at least trying to develop some sort of way to understand where it comes from, how it has to.
Well, consensus works all the time. Like climate change, that really works well for the world.
We can't just consensus something like that into existence. You know, we can't all just agree that it exists. We've got to first prove that it exists without doubt that it's real. And then we can talk about attributes. We can try to do experiments and do whatever we need to find
I like
how
Sam Harris.
I just want to know what we're talking about. Like, it seems like people say soul this, soul's that. Before we can even determine how to prove it, what are we even talking about? What is the merit of this thing that we're talking about?
So
before we get to some sort of like.
Speaking of that, I like how Sam Harris puts it. I believe it was him. He said it's kind of like a computer program, but a background computer program. You know, behind the surface of all the other programs.
A substrate.
Of some kind. And it's like coordinating things. It's aware of itself. It's really hard. Basically, it's a background computer program that's running under the radar. It's hard to detect. And I think that's the best way I can grasp the idea of a consciousness. Because people, when they meditate and when they practice mindfulness, as they call it, they're able to watch or be aware of how they think. They're watching thoughts pass by. And I think someone mentioned it as like watching traffic drive by is you're just watching your thoughts go. And then you're more aware that you're watching your thoughts go. And
does the watcher have thoughts?
Yeah, that would be infinite regress of some kind. But I think if we can demonstrate that through meditation and things like that, then we know that it's definitely in our mind that way, if we can control it. Or unless you think we're in the Matrix and then everyone's Neo and we can start bending spoons. That'd be cool.
Well,
I would love that.
Maybe that's the case, but it's certainly pretty well hidden.
This might be a bit of an off-topic thing, but for at least the simulation argument, the cool thing is a lot of people who hold true to that, hey, maybe we're in a simulation, the only evidence that they can point to would be other simulated things.
Right.
If everything is in fact a simulation, what kind of evidence are you pointing to that's actually tangible and legitimate? And there is none if it's all a simulation. It's a self-defeating argument. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I know that stuff is pretty cool. I really haven't gotten into it that much, but it's freaky to think about. And I off the top of my head, I can't prove that I'm not in a simulation.
My brain in a vat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just can prove that there's definitely no soul, and that most likely there's definitely no God that any type of religion has come up with.
Well, I'm not. All we can say is that we're not convinced from the arguments we've heard that there are gods. Yeah, that's why I'm an agnostic atheist. I don't say there's no God, but I don't believe in any.
I'm in the same boat.
Until somebody proves that one exists, then I don't believe.
I do have a question for you guys, because I was thinking about this today, and I decided that I'm also an anti-theist. I moved it that way. And most people have, like, all these atheism is, like, so many categories. And I was wondering what some of the categories you guys fit under. Obviously, he just said he's an agnostic atheist.
Yeah, but I'm still an anti-theist. Religion does real harm in the world and has for millennia, and we need to fight against it.
What about you, Wombat?
I'm an agnostic atheist. I don't think I have anything wrong with, religion,
dogma?
Because there's definitely atheist religions out there, and
there
I think there's definitely a lot of social benefits. But theism aspect is not something that's been demonstrated to be true to me yet, and it's not so much anti-theism that I'm against, it's anti-Gnosticism, the people who think
people
they know something
certain.
Without able to support it with evidence.
People say
those
they
are the
know
people
they
that
know.
I'm... Yeah, that is what I'm against. If there is a God, I'm totally fine with that. It's just that
like
matter
to
of
know.
God.
If there is one, I'd be one of the first people in line saying, show me.
But if there's someone who claims to know something without evidence to support it, that irks me in a very deep way. And that's why I go out and talk to people and try to help them figure it out.
Is there a word for anti-woo or anti-quackery? Because I feel like that would cover a lot of bases. Anti-pseudoscience, which religion I think falls under.
And so many people say they believe during, because of faith and the way they feel. You know, I feel the spirit moving in me. Feelings aren't facts. I mean,
that's a really good impression. What was that, like
very
Georgia? I don't know.
West Tennessee. But I could stay there all night long.
Go ahead. Let it out, brother.
No.
Get the spirit in you.
Nope.
Like, what was that?
anyway.
So, hey, I'm going to, just as a quick little plug, I know we're getting short on time, but I'm actually going up to Cincinnati on November the 7th to give a talk for the American Atheists.
Cool.
I'll be giving the same talk, more or less, that I gave when I was at Pellissippi College.
Mm-hmm.
But it's
like
a really cool opportunity. Yeah, thanks. It's going to just be an updated talk. I'll have some other videos to show. And take some of the feedback that I got from the last presentation and present more on how you can talk to anyone about anything, including religion, and you can do it in a really positive way, in a way that gets through to people in a really productive way.
Right, just holding conversations and exchange of ideas, what could possibly go wrong. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
I think it's great. And we got about a minute left. Final words, Thomas?
I'm hungry.
No.
Yeah.
Wombat?
Have a good one, guys.
And this is Dr. Five. Remember, don't worry about hell. Everybody's going to somebody else's hell. And until they prove that souls and heaven and hell are real, don't sweat it and just live a good life. That's all when you know you got. So this is almost 8 o'clock. We'll see you next week at 7 o'clock on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM. And everybody say bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
listening to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.